Ron Ananian.
Do you ever wonder, that little bit of a stumble, that little bit of a hesitation, he who hesitates is lost? Well, sometimes you lose a whole lot more than just being lost.
Too often, the best time I have is when I am lost, before I get where I'm going.
The Car Doctor.
I just want you to be open to ideas, because the things we talk about are very, very different than your perception in some cases.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
Hey, welcome. Start your engines and let's get under the hood. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, here at 855-560-9900. Here to talk to you about your automotive problem. And we're going to dive right in because without the usual fanfare, we've got Bob from Springfield, Illinois. We held over from a previous hour. If you're on an affiliate and you're just new to it, well, you know, we don't normally do this, but this was a good couple of questions we thought, and we wanted to hang on to Bob. We didn't want to rush him at the last hour. So, Officer Bob, are you still there, sir?
I am, sir.
We were talking about your intake gasket. For everyone just tuning in, Crown Victoria, 2006 Crown Vic, replaced the intake, and the intake's leaking. And my comments were, you know, where's the leak coming from? And one of the things you could do here is, instead of running the engine and trying to look at it, nothing worse than trying to work on and look at an engine when it's hot. Can we do this when it's cold? So it might require you buying a pressure test or something to go on the radiator or the coolant bottle to pressurize the system and then see where the leaks are coming from. And, you know, that's one way of doing it. The second way, if you want to pinpoint it, is to simply purchase a cooling system dye, which is sort of, you know, when you go to the doctor and they put that dye in your veins and they want to look and they want to see, you know, are the arteries and everything flowing as good as they could? And then they look at you under that big fancy lamp and charge you $10,000 for that test. And, you know, same thing with a car, except it's a lot less than 10 grand. If it's that cheap at a doctor's, and, you know, you put the fluorescent dye in and you will see, you know, where it's leaking out using a black light and a pair of special glasses. And that'll give you a clue. If you really think it's the corner of the intake, short of it being the wrong intake, a bad new intake, a warped intake, wrong bolt, something like that, if we think it's the sealing surface of the head, and I've done this on occasion, I will take some RTV, but I will use Permatex, the right stuff. And I'm sure there's other things out there that work, but I can tell you from experience, Permatex, the right stuff, really works well. All right? And I will put a schmear, all right? A definition of a schmear in New Jersey is your index finger, a dab, and a okay across the top of the area, just enough to give it a taste, all right? And then put it together, and, you know, you've got to give it. They say, Permatex says it's 15, 20 minutes, but I would give it at least an hour before I started it up and got it wet and then see where that goes, all right? So okay. those really are your three choices for that. Number one, I mean, I'm sure, and just for the record, I'm sure you can find Permatex, the right stuff. And if you have an O'Reilly Auto Parts by you, you can find it, and you can get it at O'ReillyAuto.com and so forth. But, you know, that's where I would start this conquest. So, second question.
Second question is a 1995 Dodge Ram 1500. And a couple of weeks ago, just suddenly my speedometer started reading about twice as fast as I was going, which is, you know, I'm going down the highway at 100 miles an hour, according to the speedometer. I replaced the speed sensor in the transmission.
Right.
And that didn't seem to fix it, although having driven it on several times after that, there has been one or two times when it appears like it's reading correctly.
Okay. Does this have any controls or functionality for standard to metric? I don't think it's this, but I just want to be sure. There's no way to change the speedometer to read in metric.
No.
Okay.
No.
You know, just although that still wouldn't be twice as fast. You were going to say something else, Bob. What was it?
Whatever it was went right out of my head.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
You know, so then my questions would be, does the vehicle have cruise control?
Yes.
Does the cruise control work?
Well, that's what, at this point, time it is not. So I was thinking maybe there's some connection between the two. I'm assuming if the speedometer's not working, the cruise control can't work.
Well, let's say it like this. If the speedometer, if the cruise control is receiving a signal, it doesn't know that it's, it doesn't know that you're trying to put the cruise on at 100 miles an hour. So theoretically, the cruise would work.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So my first question is, does the cruise work? Cruise doesn't work. Second question, if you hook up a scan tool, now this is OBD1. This is going to be the connector out under the hood, 95. Although 95, it can be, 95 was the first year on some models, but it could go either way. So whatever way, shape, or form, you can get a scan tool hooked up. Speedometer reads 100 miles an hour. What does the PCM say? What does the powertrain control module say? If the powertrain control module sees 100 miles an hour and it matches the speedo, then I'm going to say that somehow the speedometer sensor or the connection, the wire, something is fouled up here that is producing an erratic signal. But if the PCM is seeing 50 miles an hour but the speedo is displaying 100, then it's one of two choices. Either you're going to start to scope out the speed sensor, it's a 5-volt square wave signal, and you're going to look at the signal itself to see, does it match what it should be at 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 miles an hour, et cetera? Or do you have a fault in the speedometer cluster? All right.
Okay.
That's how I would approach it, because, you know, everything has to line up. PCM's got to agree with trans, got to agree with what the speedo cluster says. So now you've got to figure out a way to, you know, get your hands on a scan tool and go in and look at that and attack it that way. All right, sir?
I appreciate that.
Well,
you are the man to go to.
Well, we're trying. You know, we're trying. And, Bob, I'll tell you what. Stay on the line. We're going to be sending you a $25 gift card courtesy of the folks at O'Reilly Auto Parts, batteries, brakes, and the O'Reilly O Rewards program. Whatever it is that you need, O'Reilly Auto Parts has it. Better parts, better prices every day. Stay on the line, and you can use that $25 gift card, hopefully towards some of the parts you need for either the Crown Vic or the 95 Dodge Ram. All right, sir? All right, hang on 1 minute, and Tom will take your information. Let's get over to Alan in Springfield, Illinois, 04 Chevy Malibu, and some questions about no starts and no sparks. So, Alan, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Hi, Ron. How you doing today?
Good, sir.
To see you every weekend.
Thank you, sir. What's going on?
Well, this is my sister's car. I take care of her for because she's unable to.
Okay.
And we originally started with the codes P300 and P420, which are, you know, spark and emission.
Right. Well, one's random misfire for those those that don't know, and P0420 is a CAT efficiency or a CAT failure code. So go ahead.
Right.
Yeah, go ahead.
So we replaced the spark plugs, the plug boots, and the ignition module.
Okay.
Got our spark back. We replaced the O2 sender and sensor and got rid of the P420, but now we're having a fuel problem. Unable to get fuel up there, so wonder what my best spot is.
When you say you're unable to get fuel, Alan, no fuel pressure, no injector pulse?
I'm not getting anything from the back at all. It's if I, you know, pull the plugs out, put a little ether in it.
Yeah.
It'll start up for run for about a minute or so, but there's no continuous fuel and I'm not getting a signal. And I've already replaced the relays on it because we had problems with relays before.
Okay. So let me ask you this. What prompted all this? In other words, you had fault codes and it went into a no start condition, or it was running but it had fault codes and you did the work, and now you... Go ahead.
It was originally running, and then we replaced, like I said, the ignition parts, and then it went into a no-run situation a few weeks later, replaced the O2 sensor, so we got rid of the emission code, and I'm not getting any really new codes, but no fuel to the engine.
Okay. Just out of curiosity, do you still have the old ignition module?
Yes, and I had it tested.
Did you try swapping it back?
Yep.
Okay, and it made no difference.
So
basically, we've got what's probably an unrelated problem here in that we've got a vehicle with no fuel pressure.
Right.
Okay. So, and, you know, it's possible, right? My dead dog that wasn't dead yesterday died today. You know, here we go. You did plugs, you did, you know, a couple of sensors to solve one set of problems, and 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, you've got a completely separate problem in that the vehicle doesn't start. Fair analysis?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'll tell you what, Alan, stay by the phone. Let me pull over and take this pause, and when I come back, we'll talk about it. I'm Ron Anini and the Car Doctor. We're back right after this. Welcome back. Ron Anini, the Car Doctor, here at 855-560-9900. And keep in mind, 855-560 is 24-7. You can call anytime, day or night, leave a message. We are live on the network Saturday afternoons, 2 to 4 p.m. So we're live Saturday afternoons, 2 to 4 p.m. But you can call 855-560-9900 anytime, leave a message, and our producer will call you back and get you in the lineup for the following week's live show to talk to you about your particular car problem. And if you're podcasting us, we thank you. And make you aware also, just in case you didn't know, we're at TuneIn, iHeart, iTunes, and you can click subscribe from your local podcast player on your phone or your device, and those numbers help us with our sponsors, which is always important. So let's get back to Alan in Springfield, Illinois, 04 Chevy Malibu. Alan, you're still there, sir.
Yes, sir.
So we pulled over. We took the pause. You were explaining for our new listeners, just maybe checking in, that you had done an oxygen sensor, you had done some spark plugs and ignition module. A couple of weeks later, your sister's 04 Malibu went into a no-start condition, and now it's got no fuel pressure. Fair statement?
Yes, sir, and I wanted to try to have you give me the logical steps to give it a shot. So,
okay. What sort of scan tool do you have, Alan? Anything?
What I do is I go to the local O'Reilly's and borrow one of their OBD2 scanners usually.
Okay. And that's great, but here's a case where one of the things I'd love to do, because I'm going to have to make some assumptions. I'm going to have to say that the fuel pump doesn't run. Fair statement? You don't hear the fuel pump buzz when you turn the key to the on position and not crank it?
I do not.
Okay. So, has this vehicle gone into anti-theft? All right. And here's a perfect example. Everybody asks me, hey, Ron, what's the difference between OBD2 and manufacturer-specific? OBD2 may or may not give us that PID, that display on the scan tool to say anti-theft active, all right? Whereas a manufacturer specific, if we had this a scan tool program to read as GM wanted to for a 2004 Malibu, we could bring up the vehicle theft deterrent module and bring up PID active, non-active. If it read active, it thinks the car is being stolen and it won't turn the fuel pump on. You'll have spark. Do you have injector pulse? Did you happen to check for injector pulse?
I'm getting no pulse and no pressure at the.
Okay, so then let's think along those lines, and what we've got to do is find out. We're going to have to plug in a scan tool and look for a vehicle theft deterrent active. If it says active, it's the theft deterrent system is disabling the system, and then at that point you're going to have to get into looking at the pass lock voltage in the BCM. And you've probably, I won't say with 100% certainty, obviously I want you to scan the BCM for fault codes, because here's something else OBD2 can't do. You've got to look in the BCM for fault codes, the body computer, and if it all leads in this direction, you're probably going to come up with things like an 1128 or a 2958, which tells us that you've probably got an issue with either the ignition switch or the pass lock sensor. All right.
Okay.
So that's one possible diagnosis. Anti-theft system, ignition switch, pass lock, some fault codes, BCM, etc. All right. Second diagnosis. In the underhood fuse block, fuse number 47 or 48, I think it's 48, should be the fuel pump injector fuse. All right. You want to make sure that's got 12 volts. If that doesn't have 12 volts, if that fuse is blown, we've got to find out why. That's the fuse that supplies power to the fuel pump relay fuel pump circuit.
Okay, and you said that should have at least 12 volts, right?
Right, that should be 12 volts across that fuse key on.
Gotcha.
All right. And then if that fuse checks good, you've got to find the fuel pump relay. I believe it's going to be in that same underhood electrical center. or the
user? Yeah, I've changed that before. I think I don't remember the exact. I think it might have been 30. I'm not sure, but I have changed that.
Yeah, well, I wasn't going to say to change it, but they call it the UBEC because GM has to put. Well, they all have to put acronyms on everything. But if you if you go across pins 30 and 87 on that relay, you know, down in the fuse block, on the fuse block side, you should get fuel pressure. If you look at a wiring diagram, you'll see 30 and 87 are the switched legs of the relay. You jumper across that, you should see fuel pressure.
Okay.
All right. And if you do that and you still have no fuel pressure and you go back to the tank and you measure 12 volts at the pump, power and ground, always remember you want to measure both legs back there, then you've probably got, then you've most likely got a bad fuel pump itself, barring something weird, an animal chewed through a wiring harness, you know, something along those lines.
Right. So I'd rather start the logical up under the hood and work my way
back. But here's a, you know, and for me, this is, you know, for a car guy, this is exciting because here's a classic example of, you know, OBD2 works well. It doesn't cover everything. And it makes it, it makes the argument complete when I say a shop needs to, on a regular basis, do a complete scan of all modules looking for pending or potential or hard fault codes in areas other than the PCM, other than the engine controller, because this is where you're going to see it. All right, sir?
Great. You give me a lot of avenues to trot down on.
It's a lot of ways. Nobody ever thinks about the anti-theft. See, that's always the first place I tend to go look, you know, for something like this, because it'll give you all the symptoms of, you know, old school bad fuel pump, but it's the computer that's holding it and keeping it on.
That shows what being away from the car biz 25 years will do to you.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, Alan, between you and me, don't tell anybody else. Sometimes I think the reason I don't retire is because I'm afraid if I'm out of this business 2 weeks, never mind 25 years, I think if you're out of this business 2 weeks, it's over. So when you go, you've really got to be ready to go. This is like that this is like that one-way mission to Mars. When you go, you really got to want to go because there's no coming back.
There's no coming back. You use the old school logic and the new tech, and I really appreciate the help.
Well, listen, I got to tell you, and we talk about this. It seems like we're talking about it more lately in the shop and here, you know, at the house and so on, and here at the studio. But I'm very grateful for the course life took me, and I'm really proud to be here to help anybody about their car. And you know, while not all necessarily agree with me, it's just putting the education and the ability I've got to the best use that I know how, and hopefully I help somebody, and I'm glad to be of service to you today, sir. So you humble me.
We really appreciate it, my friend.
Well, you're very welcome. Good luck to you, and I hope your sister's car is, you know, shiny side up and dirty side down and traveling down the road once again. All right? You take good care, Alan.
Love you.
You take good care, man. Be good. You know what? Listen, you got to appreciate each and every moment and what you're doing, and, you know, that's part of fixing cars. Somebody said to me this week, when are you going to retire? And I said, retire from what? And they said, why, aren't you working? I said, heck no, I don't work. I fix cars. I've been having fun. I'm going to keep on having fun. Hey, a real quick Car Doctor shout out. We're going to surprise him here. This is for Bob from the New York City Office of Emergency Management and the Friday Night Car Club out on Long Island, New York. They met up with Tom Ray at a recent meeting, and they explained to him how he's a celebrity, and they think I'm a celebrity of all things. And they listen to the Car Doctor on Friday nights while they're playing and listening to their cars. And Ron and Andy and the Car Doctor says, thank you very much. I'll be back right after this. Don't go away. Hey, welcome back. Ron and Andy and the Car Doctor rolling along this hour at 855-560-9900. Just remember, if you're clicking out there and you're podcasting, to click subscribe. It helps the Car Doctor out, and we appreciate that. Let's get on over and talk to Garth in Wisconsin, 05 Dodge Grand Caravan, and some problems with the sliding doors. Garth, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Well, I got a problem. 05 Dodge Grand Caravan. If I push the buttons on the key or the overhead console, the sliding doors will open.
Okay.
If I press the buttons on the pillar between the front door and the sliding doors, nothing happens. They won't open or they won't close.
Okay. This particular system, Garth, is really best tested using a scan tool, but let me explain a couple of things to you. And when I say a scan tool, I don't mean OBD2. I mean a manufacturer-specific, because we're going to be looking for signal from the switches. We're going to be looking for trouble codes specific to the system, because it's not uncommon for this to have problems with the harness. It's not uncommon for this to have problems with switches and or the control side as well. So there's a few bulletins out from Chrysler to talk about it, and you really kind of need to get into this deep. It's not a simple, generally not a simple solution. So that being said, if we were at the shop for conversation's sake, I would scan the vehicle for fault codes, looking to see what's in the body computer, and is the PCM, are the PCM and the BCM talking to each other and having conversation. And then once I'm there, I would take a scan tool, go into the BCM, look at data, and I would look at those switches. You can look at those switches up on scan tool, and when you depress it, you can, input yes, output no, and you can actually look to see, does the BCM see a response, and then measure a response back out. Here's a case where having a scan tool would actually pay off, because you should be able to also bidirectionally control those doors and manually open and close them, or automatically open and close them using a scan tool. So that being said, you can take the pillar area apart, should you wish to get into this without a scan, and look at wiring harnesses, because the harness, the connectors by the switches and the connectors by the doors, the harnesses by the doors tend to break and the harnesses themselves fail. And it's not uncommon to have to solder and do a lot of, rewiring down around the door areas themselves.
Is it common for both doors to fail?
No, and there's a if they're both not working. I mean, listen, anything's possible. The one broke this week, and you didn't notice and open the other one for 2 weeks, and then all of a sudden, anything's possible. But here's a case where I would really then want to see this on a scan tool, because if both doors aren't working, now I'm going to sit down and look at a wiring diagram, and I'm going to look for something common to both, but I'm also going to expect to find some sort of a fault code, because on sliding doors, the manufacturers are very, stringent. They want to know, from a safety perspective, they want to know that the vehicle has complete control at all times, and when it doesn't, they disable them and record a fault because they want it fixed. Because if something happens, heaven forbid somebody's leg got stuck in a door and it's an automatic close mode, they want to know that they took every precaution because they don't want to get sued. So, a scan tool will really tell you a great deal of information in this particular system on this particular problem.
I really got to get into a dealer or a good service station.
Good service shop that's got, dealer level, capable scan tool. You hear me talking about, Chrysler's is the Y-Tech tool, and that's fine. But, you hear me talking about things like the launch scan tool and how launch is, manufacturer specific. And, that's what you're looking for. You're looking for someone with an up-to-date scan tool like a launch that will actually be able to read the system and, take it apart electronically per se on a scanner and then, put it back together, as they need to when they go to fix it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess so. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, sir. Good luck to you, and we wish you the best. Let's pull over and take a pause, 855-560-9900. Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor, we're coming back right after this. I guess nothing can last. Welcome back. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor, rolling along here. Let's get over and talk to Corey, Northern Minnesota, 2011 Dodge Ram. Corey, welcome to the Car Doctor. How can I help?
Hi, how are you?
Good, sir. What's going on?
I had recently had on the Cummins, you have an internal exhaust brake on your turbo.
Right, a variable turbocharger delay, sure.
Right. Well, anyway, here about a month and a half ago, 2 months, it stuck open or stuck shut. So I didn't, the exhaust brake was stuck on. So I tore it down and went through the whole turbo, cleaned it up. And it wasn't sooted up. It wasn't anything. And except for there was like a piece that was behind the variable. And I called Whole Set and they said that part does not belong in there. Well, there's it's not possible that the part went through the motor and all the way around. And it was in there from factory.
Okay.
And that's what caused it to stick shut. So I put it all back together, put it back on, and now I'm throwing a POOAF code, which is...
Right, and it's listed as a turbocharger fault because it's not seeing it's not seeing proper boost, and so it's limiting. It's going to actually it's actually seeing an internal error. The turbocharger actuator sees an internal error in the turbocharger itself because there's what they call a smart device. They've got a controller on that, so it doesn't overboost. Translate that into it. They don't want it to overboost and pay for engines under warranty. So now you've got a fault code after cleaning it and taking this piece out. That's what you're saying to me?
Right. Okay. And then I'm wondering if the actuator is the problem. But everywhere I take it to is like, well, you got to replace the turbo. Well, it's $4,000. And I was like, well, I don't want to do that.
Right.
But I'm wondering if when I took it off, if that actuator didn't get damaged.
It's possible. I doubt it. Generally... the OOAF turns into a turbocharger. It's a pretty short trouble tree, as I remember. It's engine not running. Do you have the fault codes? Key on engine not running. Do you have the fault codes? If you've got that fault, fix it. If you have a UO10, they want you to, you know, go through some things elsewhere. But if that code is there by itself, they want you to undo the turbo connector. You know, any of the pins damaged? Is the harness intact? That type of thing, and if the answer to that is no, it comes down to put a turbocharger in it.
Because there's a pretty big board on that actuator, and like a computer board, and I didn't know if that was causing the issue with it or not.
I haven't seen that computer board. That's the smart device. That's the what you're describing to me sounds like you're talking about the actual wastegate device that's controlling the turbo, and that has
it's right built right on the
yeah,
turbo.
That has its own separate set of faults as well. But to my knowledge, you know, generally the OOAF becomes a turbocharger assembly, and it doesn't care how much money it is. It is what it is. How many miles are on this? How many miles are on this truck?
I got 2K on it.
200,000.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I mean, like all the working motions in that are they're clean. I mean, they aren't sloppy. Everything's tight. Even the turbocharger itself is tight.
Well,
the tolerance is real tight on it.
Well, let me ask you this question then. Have you considered sending the turbocharger out to someone to have it inspected and rebuilt? Because I'm sure not everybody is, you know, plunking $4,000 down at the Chrysler store to buy one.
Right.
You know,
I haven't, but yes.
And you know, there's tolerances inside that turbo that you can't measure unless you're a machinist, unless you do this for a living, which in this case you wouldn't have called me. You'd have the answer already. At that point, maybe the way to go about this is, because I feel your pain, brother, but it's generally around the turbo. I would tell you either the turbo's got to be replaced or disassembled and inspected and, you know, tested. And if that cost you, I don't know, $500, $1,000, it's still not four. All right?
Exactly, I guess.
So, you know, that's the way to go. The only other place I would look, Corey, before I let you go, is I would just take it to your repair shop if they've got the ability. And Chrysler doesn't make it easy for an independent shop to do this. It's one of the things I dislike about Chrysler and their vehicles. But I would definitely have the VIN run through the Chrysler system to see if there are any software updates for this. All right? Any software updates and bulletins pertaining to this? I'm not aware of any. This is usually clear-cut bad turbo. But, you know, I've learned what I knew yesterday is out the door today. So, welcome to auto repair.
Right. So now, if I, because when I unplugged that now, that actuator, my fault code went off, and it just basically went back to stock, I think, is what happened.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean,
well, you
what
can't
you,
judge
was your opinion
you,
on that?
You can't judge it by that. You're modifying the conditions now. All right. You're disconnecting something and questioning why the turbocharger doesn't work anymore, right?
Right.
Okay. Well, that's why.
Well, I mean, it's working. I mean, I'm only getting 15 pounds of boost where I had 32 to 35 before. I mean, it's a big difference.
Well, it's what I'm and this is a stock system, right? This is a factory system you've got on this.
No, I tuned it, but it's a real light tune just for mileage because I do a lot of highway miles.
Okay. So let's back up a second now. You've got an aftermarket. Okay. Boost or an aftermarket software package on top of the factory turbocharger in action?
No, actually, it was retuned by a Chrysler tuner.
Okay.
So actually, it was their tuner, and then I went in and I had him throw it on the scanner, and that's what it came up as.
Okay, so. Yeah, but where did he get the software from? Is it Chrysler software? It's Chrysler-approved software, or it just happens to be a Chrysler tech running aftermarket software?
No, it was Chrysler-approved.
Okay. Well,
he bought the software from them, and then he actually just modifies a bunch of trucks and stuff like that.
All right. So what does he think it is?
He thinks it's the actuator, but that's why I was just getting a second opinion.
Yeah, The software is a curveball here, all right? I wasn't expecting that one.
Right.
All right. So if it runs properly without the software in it, all right, and it doesn't set the fault code, then, you know, stock is stock. It's working as designed. So now you put the software in it. Why does it set the fault code with the software in it? Somebody has to be responsible for writing that software. Somebody's got to have an answer as to what the parameters were that changed that now creates the fault.
Right. Okay.
All right. That so if you put this back to stock condition and it runs fine all day long, every day, 2 weeks straight, and the minute you put the modification on it, then I don't see how mechanically the turbo can be at fault. It's got to be in the software. It's got to be in whatever you added to it. You always go back to the last point of insanity, and you figure out where you went nuts.
So. All right. Well, I missed that exhaust brake because I'm running 200K on original brakes.
Right.
Because I use that. But anyway, thank you for your help and your time.
You're welcome, sir. I hope I got you in the right direction. Would you call me back and let me know what ends up fixing this, Corey? It sounds like an interesting problem.
I will.
All right. You take good care. 855-5- Hey, listen, the Car Doctor likes a mystery just as good as the Hardy Boys. 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's cruising back right after this. Don't go away. That's right, because I'm broadcasting numbskulls. Hey, Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor rolling along at 855-560-9900. Quick couple of points going on here in Car Doctor world. The folks at Raybestos, you know, we're always talking about brakes and changes to brakes, and I think brakes are probably the most commonly changed part, not just in terms of replacing them on the vehicle, but in terms of formulation. It seems that they're always replacing and changing the formula of brakes around these days, and it's just interesting to watch. I think out of all the parts that I have a choice of at the shop, brakes are probably at the top of the list in terms of brand, model, who's, what, where, when, how, why. Just always changing. Raybestos has come out with a new line of European brake pads specifically for European nameplates, and part of the solution is that it will help with not just friction area, but there's a concern about dust and dust on wheels and how that's affected. But it's a special formulation just for European nameplates, so you can look forward to that, because that's something that, you know, it's always changing. Like I said, brakes are something that we're always going through and always having to deal with down in the shop, so just be aware of that. One other point of contention. Tom, did you have a quick question about, you're shaking your head. Yes, no?
About what?
I'm not sure you're looking at me like you wanted something.
No.
All right. Just checking.
I'm just standing here minding my own business, you know, counting the paint chips here on the wall.
Oh, okay. Is that what that is? Okay. So then, right. Okay. Just checking, making sure you're, I don't want to make you fall asleep. We got 2 minutes to go here. And then the other thing I want to talk about real quick was I want to talk about Berryman. All right. Carbon. And I guess I should back out of it and do it this way. So we had a vehicle in the shop last week that we did a carbon cleaning on. Motorvac carbon clean. Didn't work. And, you know, I've been watching lately. It seems that carbon clean, that actual process of hooking the machine up, has, for lack of a better term, it's gotten very specific on which vehicles it will work on. Older vehicles, yes. Newer vehicles, not so much. And I think that newer vehicle parting line is somewhere around 2005, 2004. It seems that vehicles that don't have return lines, it's not as effective. That's become my opinion of late. And I think part of this is it seems like the carbon's getting harder. Well, the folks at Berryman must seem to agree with that because they've introduced a new high-mileage fuel system cleaner specifically for vehicles with over 60,000 miles on them to go through the fuel system and clean it because they're in agreeance, I guess. Not that they consulted me, but they could have. But it's that carbon deposits are becoming an issue. So you can look for B12 Chemtool high mileage fuel system cleaner, you know, both at their website and at your local auto parts store and, you know, see the results there. So if you're driving an older vehicle, I'm telling you right now, carbon is the biggest single problem when it comes to fuel systems today. We're going to be dealing with it for some time to come as the formulation of gasoline continues to change and evolve. Hey, I can see by the hands of the great Favag that another hour of Car Doctor has come and gone, and so must I go. Till the next time, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.